you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ross Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, we have a band that was featured in the Peacemaker TV show and brought them back in a big way. They were kind of big a few years ago. The idea is a bunch of vocalists, and they all sing big gang vocals. The band is called Bang Camaro, and Peacemaker kind of brought them back. It's pretty wild. James Gunn's a huge fan, and that got them back into getting a new album out, and it's pretty fascinating. They were big on my old radio show, The Tour Bus, and I'm very happy that we got them to come on the show. We do this every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. You can subscribe at gasdigitalnetwork.com or really just, and use the code SDR, sorry, but really just go to listen anywhere you want to listen and be a part of the show. You might hear some drilling in the background. I apologize, but here it is right now, the Bang Camaro episode of the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. This is a hit show, show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hoes. It's weed, I'm beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know.
The SDR Show, let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. With me as often, not as always, but as often, in an outfit that I'm digging, which I rarely say that I'm digging the outfit, but it's James Madden. How are you, buddy?
First of all, it hurts. I'm a wonderful dresser.
Compliment. I just give you a compliment. You're saying
yeah,
it hurts?
I dress good all the time, goddamn you. I wear jackets on stage. I have nice hats. My fucking sneakers.
I don't care what you wear on stage. I'm talking about right now on this show. You
look
good.
I'm going to wear a tuxedo to the next one we're
just
doing.
Take
we're
it.
For
James,
people don't know this,
it.
We're recording in another hour and a half. I'm going to get a goddamn tuxedo in an hour and a half to show this son of a bitch. I'm going to look like I'm in the, putting it on the Ritz video.
All right, so let me introduce these guys properly. Okay, so here's the story that they don't know this, but for fucking 15 years, I had a very well-respected, hard-to-believe rock radio show that was on about 100 stations around the country called The Tour Bus. We were on from fucking, I don't know, all the way east to all the way west. They were all over the country. And what I would love to do always, we started in 99, we went to 2015, 2016, would look for bands that kept that fucking rock and roll party vibe alive. And every once in a while, my intern, Scotty, who still friends with, would bring in bands. I'd bring in bands. And it was like, who could find the next band that was going to go over well with our fans first? And it was way back in the day, I'm guessing around, I don't know when the full album was out or just the single around 2006, 2007, when the first album came out, the band Bang Camaro. And we put on the single, which was Push Push Lady Lightning, which also now hilariously is what brought them back together. We'll get into all of it. I listened to the whole album. We both were like, what the fuck are we listening to? This is awesome. And it became regular rotation on Tour Bus Radio for the rest of the time we were on the air. We played the second album, big fans. They broke up. We'll get into all of it. Don't know why. And now they're back together. It's a very fascinating story. It's Bryn. It's Alex. It's Bang Camaro. Guys, thanks for coming to the show.
Yeah, thank you. And I remember Tour Bus. That's pretty sweet. Thank you.
Oh, you do? That's, you know, every once in a while, people come in and remember, because at one point, it actually mattered, that show. People don't realize that, but we're going back, a decade or so. It was a pretty big show. So now, let's start with what brought you guys back, and then we'll go all the way back to the beginning, because I do find it hilarious, by the way, that if you follow at Bang Camaro on Instagram, they're following one person. Who is that one person? Fucking James Gunn. I get it. You're trying to get back into season two of Peacemaker. Am I not right?
We're trying. Well, we'll see. He did tweet at us that say he said that he was pumped that we were recording again and was looking forward to trying to get us back in season two. So that was cool.
Trying. He fucking runs the show. Does he follow Bang Camaro back? I didn't look to see.
He does on Twitter. I don't know about Instagram.
Okay, fair enough. So now let's go through how this happened. So we'll talk about the early days in a minute, but I find this fascinating. You're broken up, or at least, you know, I don't know how that ending went, which I'd like to find out in a minute, but the last album was 15 years ago, right? And then this TV show comes out. I imagine they came to you because they need to get clearance. Am I right? Is that how this happens?
That's exactly right. Alex and I got an email from someone who handles sync licensing, someone we had never met before, someone from HBO, asking how much would it cost to get Push Push Lady Lightning into a new show called Peacemaker, which and they actually sent us a how they wanted to use the song. They had like a little script and kind of set up the whole scene of it, and it actually turned out to be exactly that way when the movie came out a year later, when the show came out a year later. But Alex and I didn't know what to make of it. We were like, why?
It's hilarious.
Yeah, it obviously we had been on hiatus for so long that it, you know, created a conversation about, hey, it's cool that, you know, they're interested in our music again. But we had to kind of fire up pieces of our business in order to, you know, get the transaction going. And so that requires meetings and communications, you know, things like, and we can get into this a little bit later, but like, you know, it required that we get into things that have nothing to do with the music, which were a lot of the things that we tried to get away from. But this was a really cool opportunity, and a lot of time had passed where, you know, it was really kind of exciting to kind of see our music kind of like bubble up out there with some interest. And so we really wanted to get on board with that. And in the course of trying to figure out, you know, the ins and outs of the business over here and like the bank account over here, you know, we just started just like passing the same jokes and, you know, just reminiscing a lot. And so essentially while we were just passing the time, we just started kicking around like a song idea, you know, just.
That's great. Let me ask you this. Is when they send you the email, do they tell you James Gunn is a part of this and it's going to be a big thing? Or for all you know, it's fucking two idiots that just said, we have a show coming out. Was it at least from like, was it on Disney Plus? That's where it's from, right? So was it at least the email address at Disney, or it wasn't even that?
It was HBO.
Oh, it was HBO. Yeah. Sorry,
HBO Max. Yeah. And no, not at all. It came from like a third party. And they kind of put it like, oh, we're looking at a lot of bands, but we thought you'd fit well. Here's the scene we want to use you in. And we really, we, you know, Alex and I, we always stayed in touch with, you know, just IMing each other and stuff. And we were like, what do we do about this? Like, yeah, I guess that'd be cool.
That's really wild. And how long into it was it when you found out how big it was going to be? Was it not till it was released?
No idea, really. Again, like we didn't really know what we were doing. We were asked how much they thought we should license our music for. Fortunately, we have a friend or two that's kind of keyed into the industry, and we're kind of able to, you know, give us, you know,
some sort of rudimentary idea
what we were supposed to be doing.
Right.
And it was at that point that, you know, our contact let us know that the people that we're dealing with are legit people who do really great work in the industry, and that we should be very excited about all of this.
That's really cool. That's fucking great. So, and then also because, I mean, you guys, I guess, licensed your music initially. That's what got you recognition, was from video games. So I imagine the payout's much bigger on a TV show. I could be wrong. I don't know how the fuck that shit works. But when you do this, did you have to figure out, oh, where does Bang Camaro money go? Did that account not exist anymore? We have to reopen that account? Is that all that shit has to be done?
Exactly. You know, everything had gone dormant for over 13 years. And, you know, the last time that we got together for a reunion show, it was in an effort to pay off, you know, I think our van and a tax bill. So once we got that out of the way, we shuttered everything. So when we started getting, you know, these requests, we had to figure out how to fire up the business again.
Right. That's really wild. And also for those that don't know, and James and I were talking about this when we were recording not that long ago, how much Peacemaker brought back a shit ton of bands. That what's wild is when you were doing it in 2007-08, it was almost, and not for me because I fucking love this music, it's what I grew up on, and I was always looking for the next, you know, Bang Come Out, for it was exactly what I'm saying, you know, but there weren't the Wigwams of the world and all these other fucking bands that are, were, became known for bringing back the fun rock and roll that I grew up on. And besides you guys getting back together, Wigwam was dropped. And then they got re-signed because of how big that show was. That's wild.
How great was that song?
Yeah, amazing.
Amazing.
Have you guys thought about doing a tour of bands off of the Peacemaker album?
People on Twitter brought it up, and I was thinking maybe when Wigwam played, everyone in Bang Camaro could go out and do the dance. But
that's good. You guys realize this soundtrack's one of the greatest things to happen in years. Let's just be blunt. This soundtrack, from spring to the end of summer, working out, people put on masks because of this goddamn soundtrack and your song. You should know this. I was 30 pounds lighter beginning of the year. Now look at me, because of you guys and James goddamn Gunn and those goofy butterflies in the fucking story of Peacemaker. Sorry,
you really gotta hand it to James Gunn on this one. For, you know, when you see how deep the bench is of the songs that they put in that series, it's like that guy, he's got it dialed in,
right? And he also, by the way, he not only put in bands like yours that were, you know, paying homage to the old school 80s rock, he didn't go with Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses. He went with deep tracks from fucking Hard London line. Choir Boys. You know, like, and Vane is on there. It's crazy, the bands that are on there. So really, for me, it made me so fucking happy that just like to watch that shit, every new episode, to wonder what cool band is going to be fucking thrown into the mix. It was a great, great feeling. I think you guys came in around episode 3 or 4, if I'm not mistaken. But Jesus, it was so cool. So now I want to go back to the beginning when that first record came out, you know, and Push Push Lady Lightning got really big. By the way, I remember seeing a cover where you, not a cover, but a live version where you worked in Shout by Tears for Fears, which was like a cool little thing that you did live once or twice. You don't believe me? I can prove it to you. You don't remember that?
No.
Do you remember that?
It sounds great.
Yeah. There was that breakdown part, Alex, where me and you would play like that part, that quiet part together, and then we brought everyone back in because one of our singers just loved Tears for Fears, so he kind of talked us into it.
That's funny. I remember that. I don't know why I remember that, but it's funny that I do and Alex doesn't. Shame on you, Alex. Know your fucking band better, for God's sakes.
I recall nothing.
Ralph, tell them when they played Sergeant Pepper with the fucking horn section. Just make up shit at this point. Just go all in.
So now the first album comes out, does really well. The second album comes out and is also doing well. You guys play fucking Conan. There was like a documentary sort of called Behind the Lies that came out. And there is still steam for the Bang Camaro band. What happens? Like, why did it stop? Where did you guys, is it because you had to divvy the fucking out the money up 400 ways on stage? Like, what was the reason that you guys stopped?
I mean, Bang Camaro was difficult in so many different ways. You know, we weren't a big enough band to drive a tour bus around the country. So we toured with 6 singers and our 4 to 5 musicians and our sound guy in a 16-person van.
Jesus.
With a little trailer attached, and we would drive around the country for 3 months at a time, getting sleep, making very little money. I think, what did we pay ourselves? $20 a day, Alex, to like eat?
We did, yeah, per diem to $20 a day, and that's what everybody got while we were out.
And it was fun, and the experiences were great, but you know, doing that for 5 years where you just like leave your home, you get in a van for 3 months, you get home, you like try to recuperate, then you go do it again. It took its toll after a while.
I have to imagine. So you didn't end badly with you guys. It was just like, Jesus Christ, how much more can we do of this?
I think we definitely just got to the point of like diminishing returns, where everyone was aware that, you know, the majesty of going out on the road, playing big shows was over and spent. So it was harder to staff our tours. Also, at the same time, you know, you got to remember back in those days that this was still the point where, you know, the record labels had not figured out that the internet was a thing that they were going to use. They were trying to pretend like it didn't exist. All right. And then Apple Music iTunes was kind of telling the world that, you know, your songs were worth 99 cents at a go. And so what happened was Bang Camaro, it created such a groundswell that we had a lot of label interest, and mm-hmm. we sat down with a lot of record labels, and we sat down with like a lot of high-powered lawyers. only to discover that those record labels, they really wanted to get into the 360 deal. So which right. meant that they were, in addition to, you know, taking a percentage of like your whatever you sell, you know, the music that you sell, they wanted a piece of our touring, a piece of our merchandise, and all of these things that when we looked at like the initial money that they were going to pay us for our first album, we realized that all we needed to do was sell like another 1,000 records out of our trunk to make that money ourselves. Right. So we ended up taking a lot of the money that we were making and putting it into the band and to make us a touring entity at a time when we had no other support money coming in at all. Mm-hmm. So we would come home from the road and then everybody else would get paid. And then Brent and I live in this really shitty, horrible apartment that's infested with all kinds of garbage.
Oh, no.
And we would end up with nothing. Oh, other than just like the experience of having gone and done this, only just to spool it up again to go do it again and then come home to even less.
Right.
So it was just untenable.
I mean, also, so I have a lot of questions about that. So, like, I know I don't. First of all, let's go this. Where did the ridiculous name came from? It was just, let me think of the two most cock rocky words and put them together, or is there more of a meaning behind it?
It actually started. Alex and I were playing in indie rock bands in Boston, and we'd known of each other, and both of our bands split up around the same time, and so we wanted to maybe form a new band. And I think over whatever we were using at the time, was it like AOL Instant Messenger? I don't even know what the heck was back then.
ICQ maybe?
It was ICQ, you're right.
Yeah.
And so I, for some reason, sent Alex a message that we should grow mustaches, get in a Camaro, and call our band Bang Camaro.
Strong.
Made no sense. But that
makes nothing but sense to me, sir. That's what we call genius in this business.
At this point, brother, seriously though, had you guys ever banged in Camaros, or you never did?
I'm way too big of a nerd to do anything that cool.
Okay.
although right around the time that the band was recording our first record, I got married.
Oh,
and the band
touchdown.
In their infinite wisdom, they bought me a Camaro. Like an 86, a black 86 Camaro that was not street legal, was a complete disaster. My then wife was horrified by the entire thing, and it lived in my driveway for about three years. But I did have a Camaro, but no banging in it. No.
Yeah, by the way, Bang minivan as a married guy doesn't have the same ring to it, that's for sure.
That's going to be my cover band I start. You know,
delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So when you come up with the idea, because I don't know how you got, you know, I know it was the two of you that were the inception of the band. And then it was, hey, we got a bunch of guys that we know that can sing. Let's just bring them over and see what happens. Right. But at some point you had to say, all right, well, we're just going to bring as many fucking dudes on stage as possible. I think sometimes as many as 12 guys up there. I'm imagining most of the local guys that you find don't get a paycheck. They're coming because they just want to get up on stage and sing. Is that fair?
Yeah, that was fair. They were also all lead singers in other bands in Boston that we knew, because it was a pretty good team. So they all really good singers and thought it'd be really funny to get up there and yell cock rock phrases and stuff. So we would we'd get together, and we had weekly practices in this tiny practice space. And so we went out and we bought our own fog machine just to make it more rock and roll. So we had a light show and a fog machine every time we practiced. And it was a... I don't know. It was like just like kind of a show for ourselves, but it was a great time.
When you were touring, would you allow like choose winners or fans to get up and sing with you guys as part of the tour? Because that would be cool as shit. Because one bad singer, you're not going to really hear them. I just told the story the other day. At one point, I got to sing on stage with Poison, which is great. I can't sing, but there was like eight of us up there. So it doesn't matter. No one heard my horrible singing.
Yeah, it was eventually what we did when we got serious into touring was we created a program where we had regional choirs. So, you know, Ben Camaro fans in Chicago would come hang out with us. We'd have one out in L.A., one out in Nashville. And it was really great because it helped solidify, like, street teams in those areas.
That's cool.
Like, makes sense. Big fans who would help promote our shows. But then, you know, they would come and, you know, they would have their spot on stage. After we did it for a little while, you know, you come to know these people and they kind of become a part of, like, your extended family. Like, whenever I think about us going at Chicago, there was definitely a handful of guys that would always come out. And the important part for us is that people understood that, you know, yeah, it's supposed to, you know, look like we're all having a good time and it's a party on stage sort of thing. But, like, there was also this kind of, like, this misnomer that it was just a bunch of drunk people singing behind a couple of guitar players. When really, like, when the guys would show up, they would realize, like, oh, you guys sing in three-part harmony most of the time. And
right.
So they would have to, like, kind of get involved. But, yeah, we would always have people all over the country to help us out.
Because I think people don't realize that, first of all, if you're not familiar with Ben Camaro, right, what you basically are is my favorite part of every song, which was the gang vocals, I think is the right term. It's just an album of gang vocals. I would say mostly choruses is a fair judgment, right? And just tons of guitar. It's guitar and gang vocals. How could you not get behind that as a guy growing up with loving rock and roll? But from what I understand, because of the way that's done, it takes you guys way fucking longer to record the records because of the way you set up and arrange these songs. Is that right?
Yeah, they would take a long time. We put all of the singers around a single microphone. We figured mm-hmm. this is the best way to make it sound good. So it wasn't everyone doing their own part, but each person would do one, or each group would do one part of the three-part harmonies that we're running all together. So if one person messed it up, you do it again. And sometimes they were doubling that. So it would take, you know, about a day to do a track where, you know, a lead singer could rip through a few tracks in a day.
All right. That's crazy. And now that the new album, which the first single I got to hear is called Too Fast to Fall in Love, and the new album, did you record everything that way still to this day, or did technology change in 15 years?
Well, vocally, we employed the same idea, you know, crowding everybody around the room. Yeah, I don't think that one was all that different. But what the technology did afford us was, you know, Brent and I are able to work in our home studios as opposed mm-hmm. to us going to a studio and, like, tracking our solos and hoping that our fingers work that day and that we get something good. We've definitely been afforded the luxury of just being able to work at home. Mm-hmm. Running our 80 takes by ourselves, and then we just upload our tracks to our engineer producer and he takes care of everything. It's great.
So here's a stupid question, and I'm sorry I don't know the answer to this, but is there someone who you would consider, oh, he's the actual main singer of the band and everybody else works with him? You know what I mean? Or is it just there's six guys that tour with us
wow.
and they all have equal say? And that saves probably nothing because it's really you two.
I see what you mean. So not the best singer everyone follows, but the person in charge of the
yeah,
player.
That's the guy that's like the guy. And also, like, if you're going to put
captain.
Down a click track or someone that's just like to kind of base it on, someone to base off songs off of, the guy that's singing those songs.
You know, honestly, I would say I was joking before, like, it's Bryn, but it kind of is Bryn. It's also me, and to some degree, it's our bass player and art director, Dawes, where these songs, they get written by just us.
Mm-hmm.
So when our choir comes in, like, there isn't, you know, and this isn't a detriment to them, but it's like everything is written. And so
okay.
it's more like we become directors of a movie, and we have to get our actors to sing exactly what we've written for them. Every now and again, like, we'll have things that'll kind of pop up and be like, oh, that's interesting, and so forth. But I'd say for the most part, like, our leader in that regard has really been me and Bryn.
So you guys grew up in Boston, or at least the band's inception is in Boston. There's a lot of fucking famous bands from Boston. Was there ever anybody that either joined you on stage or made it into one of the tracks that'd be like, oh shit, that was Steven Tyler in track 4 or whatever the fuck it is? Did any of that ever happen?
We got kicked out of a bar with Nuno Betancourt one time. So that was pretty cool.
That's a story that needs to be told.
That's funny. Yeah. Why? Can you elaborate on that?
All right. This would have started. This would have started at the Boston Music Awards in 2008. And so I'm sorry. I don't mean to jump in here, but I'm going to tell my.
This is going to be great. There's no chance this isn't a great story. Even if you don't make fun of him for his name.
We'll see. All right. So in those days when the Boston Music Awards were being held, they usually do them a little bit differently every year, but it was happening at the Orpheum in Boston here. And we were up for a couple of awards. And instead of doing the thing where like they go on stage and just, you know, talk about all the nominees and then just say your name, they would send a handler out and say, they're going to hand you an award. You need to come backstage and wait until you get called. So that's how we find out that we win. All right. So Bryn and I are hanging out backstage. Okay. And you have to understand that this is a long, long time ago. And so we were full of a lot of liquid courage. And I remember very specifically that Tom Hamilton and Joey Kramer were standing next to us.
That's all right? Cool.
And we had just watched the newly reunited Extreme get together and perform Decadence Dance or something. I forget what it was.
And they did a Led Zeppelin cover or something, yeah.
It was fucking awesome, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So back in those adventurous days, Bryn, you know, is standing with me. And, you know, Bryn has always been the catalyst for something ridiculous that we're about to do. And so he nudges me and just says, like, let's go find Nuno and Gary. So we wind our way up to the green room in the Orpheum, which I didn't even know where it was at the time. And I firmly remember pushing past Tom Hamilton like this, feeling like, excuse me.
You're a tall dude.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking to myself, just like that, I've never done anything so ridiculous in my life, all right? Tom Hamilton was like, excuse me. We get to the green room, and Nuno and Gary are sitting there. They have no idea who we are. And we're like,
actually, no, Nuno knew Bang Camaro because his friend made him listen to our CD on the way from the airport when he picked him up.
Oh, that's fun.
That's right.
Cool.
Right. So, but when we introduced ourselves, we're like, oh, we're the guys from Bang Camaro. And that's when he was like, oh, you like, I know your record. And then I felt, I remember this too, because you have to understand that Bryn and I we're talking to Nuno Betancourt. It's somebody who we had posters of him on our walls when we were kids.
Right.
So it's a huge thrill just to see him there and have him actually, you know, recognize like, oh, I know your record and I enjoyed it too. So we're like over the moon. And of course we're ignoring Gary Cherone who, you know, Gary Cherone, but we're just talking to Nuno. I feel terrible about, you know, not taking the opportunity to talk to Gary. Anyway, Bryn had this brilliant idea where he just asked Nuno, hey, you know, we're about to get called up on stage in a minute to accept some award. Will you accept it for us?
And well, that's fun.
Like, that's ballsy. I like that.
So
Nuno was totally into it. He was like, yeah, whatever. He's got that crazy Boston accent.
There are photos of this somewhere. They must be on the internet. And but yeah, they called us out and Nuno came, grabbed our award. He gave a speech. He made a comment about how, you know, I know everybody here is excited that that Extreme finally got back together. But he's like, fuck that. I'm going on the road with these guys. And everybody's like, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. That's great.
So yeah, anyway, then after that, we
got on the bus and left, and that's when you guys got kicked out.
Oh, you weren't there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So afterwards, we, for some reason, went to the Hard Rock Cafe because that sounded funny, and it was around the corner. And I don't remember exactly what was the catalyst of it. I think one of our singers was getting a little too rowdy. So basically, one of the bouncers just went to kick us all out, including Nuno. And he's like, don't you know who I am? He was like super pissed.
Right.
But then we all got thrown out the front door.
You know, it's funny. I was in the Azores in Portugal not that long ago, which is where he was born.
Yeah.
And you would think that Extreme has a album on the top of the charts right now, the way people talk about him whenever you say you're from the States. They're like, oh, like Nuno Betancourt. And they just want to start talking about Extreme. It's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
I also thought it was implied that you got thrown out from fighting Nuno.
Me too. That's what I thought.
No, we love Nuno.
No, let's just look. Always print the rumor. You got in a fight with Nuno while you guys were playing Shout by Tears for Fears. Let's fucking keep it going.
Works for me.
Tim Burton's Big Fish.
It works for me. All right, before we go any further, if you are a fan of Kratom and who isn't, well, I don't know. A lot of people are and a lot of people aren't. I know Shannon loves it. You go to YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. YoKratom is the only place where you can get a full kilo of Kratom for just $60. YoKratom.com has all of your favorite strains, amazing customer service, and you will not find better prices anywhere. So if you're over the age of 21 and you're into Kratom, go to YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo and the official sponsor of the SDR show. All right, let's get back into it. Yeah, while you're touring or while whenever, if you do come back on tour, which is a logical question to ask, but even back in the day, was there a cutoff of like, oh, we can't put 25 people on stage. That's just stupid. Like, was there a number or it's whoever wants to show up, come on. If it's someone that you know, someone that wants to sing, just join us.
Well, we never got shut down. There was never a point where someone was just like, all right, this is way too many people on the stage. But that never... Sometimes people would say like, hey, can I come up and sing? And we would generally say no, because we wanted it to be a bit more practiced than that. But so saying, we did have people in different towns that knew us and knew the parts that we got to know well enough, and that they would like climb up on stage and do it.
Is there a record in your mind? You know, oh, you know, January 3rd, 2006 or 7, we had 83 people on stage. Is there a number that you know that was the most you ever had singing gang vocals?
It would have been in Boston, I would imagine.
Yeah,
that's where the shows are really big. But no, off the top of my head, I don't know. But I would have guessed that we would have had somewhere around. I think at our first show, like we had our choir, and then we were performing with another artist who had a choir of his own. And by the end of our set, I think we put everybody on stage, right? So we may have had upwards of like 25 to 30.
That's crazy.
But, you know, something to keep in mind, and this, like, we kind of thought about this a bit, and it made a lot of sense to me at the time where our singers were really protective of who we brought up on stage, because they didn't want anybody making fun of what they did, because we worked really hard to make what they looked like, what they were doing, make it look easy.
Right.
It was never just drunk people shouting into a microphone. It was always singers singing in three-part harmony. And so you get fans that would come to the show and be like, yeah, I want to sing with Van Camaro. And I think sometimes our singers would be like, wait a second, there's a lot more to this.
Right. I think you're describing exactly what I did when I sang with Poison, by the way. They're just some drunk idiot getting on stage. It exactly was me. So the new single, Too Fast to Fall in Love, love the fucking artwork. It looks like my... notebook in high school that I saw. So thank you so much. So now Van Camaro 3, the full album, is being released December 1st. Is that right?
No.
The single is being released. The
single's coming out December 1st. We haven't decided on a full album release date. Things are so weird now where a lot of people are even saying albums are dead. People should just release singles.
I'm a big fan of that. And then what you do is, and I've said this 1,000 times, then you release a limited edition actual album that can be purchased through fans. That's the way you do it.
That's a lot about what we're talking about. So yeah. we're going to release a few over time while we put the rest of that
before. Yeah, and then you put your blood in the album artwork or something, you know, or something
like Kiss that. With the comic book.
Yeah, like Kiss with the comic book, which I still want. Yeah.
I'm from Buffalo originally, and when I found out that comic where they put the blood in was in Buffalo. I was very proud of that.
I really wonder, by the way, I have that comic too. I wonder how much blood was actually in. You know, was it like one drop of each?
You kidding me? They did not even a quarter of it. I mean, come on.
I mean, it was probably like a little, like a diabetes check, like drop.
Also, Paul strikes me as someone that doesn't like blood.
Saying owie a lot, like owie, owie, owie. Well, it's more
yeah. yeah, I think that's some of the lyrics off Animalize.
Oh. Just as a side, as you guys mentioned that, one of my favorite things to do when I'm in my van on the road with whatever band I'm traveling in is listening to Paul Stanley's audiobook. Have you guys done
that? Oh, boy. No, I've not. What? That's great.
So he's got 45 minutes on Ace, and he's got another 45 minutes on Peter. And, oh, it is damning.
That's really funny.
My goodness gracious. And he reads it? He doesn't have some dude?
Yeah, he reads it. It's amazing.
All right, hold on. I can't believe it hasn't been suggested to me.
I think you can find it on YouTube.
That's cool. We have had both Ace and Gene, along with Bruce Kulick, on this show. And Ace said they all used to call Gene the professor because, or no, not, what was it, Professor Dumbo, something like that? Because he's like, he always thought he knew what he was talking about, but he had no idea what he was talking about, which is very funny that we have that on tape somewhere, but Ace shitting on Gene. It was really hilarious.
Oh, that's
really,
right. Yeah. I was there for that. I felt like Ace wanted to put me in a pile driver.
By the way, I don't know if I said this story to you, James, but recently I mentioned this, that this is like 12 years ago. I was offered to read the audiobook for Steven Tyler, right? They asked me, not for public release, but for him and his manager to just listen to the book. So I got a pre-release of the book, right? And they asked me to read it and then give it to them. They were going to pay me not much money, but I was like, hey, I get to fucking read.
Pretty cool. Steven.
So, but I hated the book so much, and I'm sorry to say that I made up an excuse and I gave them the book and the money back after recording two chapters. And someone reached out to me and said, there's no fucking way that's true. You're lying. So I reached out to his old manager and he sent me back proof. They said, yeah, it was that we did that in the said the year. And he said, well, who was that guy? And I screenshotted his name and then screenshotted Steven Tyler's manager. He goes, okay, I guess that's fair.
How bad could the book be in? So almost all autobiographies and memoirs stink the first two chapters because, like, and then my dad didn't make me bacon, and I like bacon, and then I played baseball. I'm not good at baseball. I like pussy. It's every rock memoir starts that way.
I feel like I'm rereading the book right now. No, but yeah,
you got to skip the five through the rest. That's but usually
I had to read the whole book into a microphone. I can't skip around to my favorite part.
I love you to death. What else were you fucking doing? You can't read chapter 3 when he falls in love with some girl named Sally.
I was a very important man, okay? But no, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it, whatever. Anyway, so to get back to this, and this actually kind of sort of segues, Bang Camaro as a band, it's mostly very cock-rocky, manly. It's a bunch of white dudes on stage. Do you at all worry in this hypersensitive environment that maybe we shouldn't be singing these songs, or we're going to get pushback if we go on tour, or did it change the way you thought about writing the third record?
It definitely changed. Maybe not so much reacting to what's going on or what people would think, but more just like kind of ourselves growing in the past 15 years, I think.
Right. It'd be funny if the song is Push, Push, Lady Lightning. At your consent, of course, m'lady, is the new lyric.
Well, the good thing about a lot of our lyrics is they're a bit abstract. So, you know, but there's a number of theories out there what Lady Lightning was pushing, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
What was she pushing? Let's get to the bottom of this, like in 60 minutes and 95. I feel like Larry King. What is Lady Lightning pushing? I want to know.
But yeah, I mean, when writing lyrics this time around, I don't think it was as much as like in the front of our mind, like, okay, we're going to stay away from this or do this, but like just having a different perspective on things. I think some of the old lyrics were, you know, in the early 2000s or 2005, 6, when we started, like irony was the big hip thing going on. Everyone wore their trucker hats and drank PBR because it was ironic. You know, they didn't necessarily like trucker hats, but that and so there was like some amount of like ironic misogyny, I guess you could say, in the
right.
Like we were saying them in kind of a tongue in cheek manner because we didn't believe in any of that. But now I would be much more careful because one thing that I found when going on tour and meeting people across the country is some people didn't take it for the irony we meant.
Right. That is a problem.
Yeah, they just took it at face value. I had some very, you know, uncomfortable conversations with people where they were like, we love that you're basically like bringing this back. And I was like, no, we're not bringing this back. But
well, you are, but you're not bringing the misogyny back. You're bringing the music back. So it's not like, you know, but so it's just that that's the difference, you know, which I get. I understand, but it is still. My favorite part of it was that you were going all in,
yes.
Regardless of whether or not the lyrics were meant to be ironic, you were going all in on what it was, which I loved. That's what made me like it.
Yeah. And there were just...
And by the way, I'm also super misogynistic. No, but...
Stop bearing the lead there.
I know this about you, Alex, and I know a couple of things about you guys. So, Alex, you grew up with your dad blasting the Sex Pistols because he's a cool dad. And... your first album that you ever bought was Quiet Riot, and you love Skid Row, one of your favorite bands. But you are way younger than me, I'm assuming. So is it, who got you into the 80s rock, considering that I'm guessing you guys are at least 10 to 15 years, if not more, younger than me?
They're younger than me, dude. Look at these guys. Look at these. They look fresh.
At least 20 years. At least 20 years younger.
You think 20 is possible? I don't know. How old are you guys? Do you just divulge that? I don't know if you do.
We're guys. Can we say, Bryn? Like we're pushing 50 at this point.
Are you really? No.
Get the fuck you're not. Out of here. No, stop it. Look at you guys. Look like your blood is made out of juice. Like you guys are healthy.
That fucking hurts me.
Yeah, it's kind of funny when we first came out. Alex and I are a bit older than a lot of the other people in the band. A lot of our singers were in their early 20s or whatever, and I was like 32 at the time.
Oh wow! Okay, now you guys look gracious. Fucking great. So this I thought you guys were gonna tell me you're like 38. That's what I thought.
Oh
so,
no!
Yeah, our manager at the time actually made us dial our ages back on social media because they thought we might be in like teeny bopper magazines.
I do that
something.
Too, but I do that because I'm single and I'm trying to get laid. So that's a very different reason. But also, by the way, Alex, my favorite answer I think I've ever heard in an interview from you, when they said something like, and I'm fucking this up, so I apologize. How do you want to die? And you said, well, I don't know exactly how I want to die, but I know that when I die, I want my body thrown out of an airplane dressed up as Superman. And that is fucking pretty brilliant. Good. I don't know if that was your joke, but it's not, a good one.
You know what? I wish I could claim that joke because I think it's fucking hilarious. You must be referencing an interview that I did in New York City, I think in 2008.
I do research, my friend. What can I tell you? I look shit up.
The best, baby.
I think one of Bryn's friends had brought that story to us. Does that sound right, Bryn?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the origin of that story, but I remember cracking up about it.
Yeah, it was a great line. We laughed about it, and like that must have been on the tip of my brain when we were having that discussion. And I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, I delve deep. I go and watch old interviews and try and come up with shit. So that is how I discovered that, my friend.
But listen, Rob, to answer your question about just how I got into all this, and I think this kind of will echo Bryn a little bit, where when I was a kid, my father was a huge rock and roll fan. He wasn't a musician. All of his friends were musicians. Okay. And so in my house, there was just nothing but rock and roll all day long. So that story that you mentioned is totally true, that when I was 3 years old, I remember hearing Hall Day in the Sun in my house because my dad was on a bender and he must have just been cranking the stereo. And, you know, from day one, I was like when you look on the back of the record of like the Great Rock and Roll Swindle, there's like a gold record or something with like a piece of shit on it. And I just remember like that was just ingrained in my memory is like that is what rock and roll is. It's just something very shiny with a piece of shit on it.
that's pretty accurate, by the way. It's pretty accurate.
Well, you know, my experiences have kind of borne that out a bit. But then my story was, and I think like Bryn was kind of, yours must have been similar, that we were kind of growing up in small towns. And really early in the 80s, I was able to figure out how to dial in MTV illegally on my television. And I had to hide it from my parents because they thought it was like something that, you know, subversive for kids. But yeah, like I think from 1982, I was watching MTV. And
you
like,
think that a father that wakes his kid up at 3 a.m. with the Sex Pistols wouldn't give a shit about watching MTV. But what are you going to do? And Bryn, well, your parents. I'm sorry.
I think mom had kicked him out of the house at that point.
And Bryn, I like this story that your parents were hippies and then you discovered Motley Crue and that changed everything. Is that right for you?
Yeah, totally. My parents were hippies. I actually lived in a teepee for a small amount of time.
Excuse me?
I lived in a teepee.
He said that with zero irony or zero like, oh, there's going to be no follow-ups to this statement.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah. My friend, we can't just skip over. I lived in a teepee for a .. for a little while. We just can't, my friend.
Okay, they're not good memories. No, I'm just kidding. So yeah, my parents were hippies, wanted to return to the earth, and so I lived in a teepee with no electricity or running water for a while.
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
So, but my parents were always very into music, very into like folk music. They played acoustic guitar all the time. And they always really wanted to get me into playing guitar, and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I liked hip hop. I was basically not into it. But when I first found out about Motley Crue, especially Shout at the Devil, my parents were really not into the Satanism.
Whoa.
They weren't very Christian, but they were just kind of like, it was the first thing that really freaked them out. So, of course, that's like what I live, like, dove right into.
That's what I'm sure the title of the new single is a tongue-in-cheek reference to Motley Crue's Too Young to Fall in Love. I can't imagine that you guys are unaware of that track.
And Too Fast.
Too Fast.
Really?
They merged them. They put them up, they took it like this. They did it. I don't even know what I'm doing with that hand thing.
What's funny is that song title, I'm pretty sure that we came up with that back in 2008.
Yeah, we've been throwing that one around for a long time.
We need to write a song called Too Fast to Fall in Love. And I've probably written about four over the past 15 years that I have like demos that are titled that. And then eventually one of them stuck. Actually, no, Brent had to come to my house and be like, oh, I have the song idea. And then he finishes it. And then what are we going to call it? Like, oh, Too Fast to Fall in Love.
Can this be homework? Can you just take titles of old Crue songs and mash
and rework them?
Can you be like 10 seconds to shout? Like, can we do that?
That's not bad. I like that also.
I'm good on my feetsies.
Does Too Fast to Fall in Love imply that you're both premature ejaculators? Is that why you can't fall in love? Is that what it means?
I mean, the lyrics are actually very literal, and they kind of came out and as like, we can't fall in love because we're just moving too quickly.
Well, that
so it was more
mean
of a
that,
physics problem.
Well, I could mean exactly that, by the way. All right, so we got to do the first and then wrap this up, James. Before I do, any other questions you want to throw in, or we'll go right into it?
This is great. We're having a good time. And look, you brought up my what I was wearing earlier. I wasn't going to wear the full tracksuit, but I see my dude here is in a black Adidas tracksuit. So I wore my red. So I'm basically the Royal Tannenbaum's before the funeral at the end of the movie, and he's the funeral. So this is perfect. I could not do this.
Are either of you wearing the pants? No, you're not wearing the pants.
I'm Method Dog.
Oh, shit. You both are?
We can play ball, dog.
Oh my god.
You guys are from Boston. Do you like are you Celtics fans or no? Because I'm a Celtic fan.
I mean, yeah, but I don't bad for sports and whatever.
I could have been beat up by Laker fans in Vegas. So I was like, fuck you, my man. I'm rooting for Robert Parrish.
I'm gonna tell you this story, James. I know you we all know I know nothing about sports, right?
You could make up sports to him. He doesn't know shit.
So I have a friend that works for the NFL. And so I'm trying to get Jay a birthday gift, right? And the gift was to get his favorite player. I only know him. His last name is Dawkins because he's on the and I only know him because his dog is named Dawkins. So I called my friend. I said, dude, you know, could you get me a quick happy birthday, Jay, from whatever his first name is, Dawkins. Right. And he goes, dude, I work for MLB, not NFL. And I know the guy like 20 years. I'm like, oh, shit. Sorry, man. Like, I care so little about sports that I didn't even make the reference. So stupid. All right, Shannon, we're going to do the first right now.
The first time. Ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is the STR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask every guest this since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we just mean the first concert you went to. It doesn't have to be a rock concert, wherever you went, but ideally on your own volition, one you went to because you wanted to, not because your hippie parents grabbed you to go to them. So we'll start with you, Bryn. First concert you went to?
Cinderella, Winger, and Bullet Boys. And
I was at that show. God damn it.
Wow. Jesus Christ. Hey, yeah.
Where did you see them?
The War Memorial in Rochester, New York.
Oh, I'm not so far away. I was in Albany at the time. I saw them in Albany. God damn it. That was a great fucking show.
It was amazing. And I remember just the feeling of the kick drum just hitting you in the chest. I couldn't believe how powerful it was. And I was really young at the time. An older brother took us. And that was the moment that I decided that's what I wanted to do with my life. And
that's awesome.
There were some of women behind us who were just like throwing beers in our hair. And it was just like, it's just the most badass experience. I love it.
That was a great, like, I remember that show so well. It was a very complimentary lineup. The bands were different enough, but in the same vein enough. And it just was fucking great, great tour. Alex, what about yours?
Of my own volition, it probably would have been Suicidal Tendencies with Queensryche at the Binghamton Arena. We had to drive 5 hours to get there, or the guitar player and my band's parents drove us, And we got there early enough that we did the thing that you saw in like the tour, like rock videos, like on MTV, where we were at the front of the door and they open up the doors and we go racing through the arena. And so I got on the very center of the, you know, the partition up front, stood there for the entire show. Jeff Tate threw a, you know, a bottle of water in my face.
Oh, that's great. I was at that tour.
The entire Operation Mindcrime.
Yeah, that was when they did the whole fucking, that was Operation Live Crime Tour. I believe that's what that was. Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it changed everything. I got to see Chris DeGarmo like right in front of me do all this stuff, and I just knew that that's what I wanted to do.
That was a great fucking tour. God damn it, I love that tour. I love Queen Drug, one of my favorite bands. Okay, so now we go to drug. First drug you ever did, Bryn, but ideally after weed, because most people's first drug is weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug. So the first drug you ever did after weed, unless it wasn't weed.
Okay, I mean, it was weed, and it was something I did really young because I'm from a small town, and small town kids are just really bored. So that started early. I think that would probably have been acid at a high school party.
Did we like it? Did we not like it?
I loved it. I remember I climbed up on top of a garage and jumped off. thinking it just seemed like a really great idea to do at the time.
And like Almost Famous. Were you a golden god?
No, I mean, I wasn't very popular and I was kind of shy, so I probably did it alone and no one even knew, but like...
Or brown god.
It was pretty... Sometimes you gotta be a
brown god, baby.
And Alex, yours?
Let's see, man. I started smoking dope in high school, like everybody else. I was playing varsity baseball. Started smoking dope and then quit. The baseball, not the dope. And then I think by the time I got to college, I started doing the heavy drinking and then LSD, I think my freshman year of college. That and cocaine.
All right. Nothing that stuck for too long, though, apparently, it seems, for the two of you.
The cocaine didn't really stick because, you know, that's weird. But the LSD was awesome. I loved it.
James, you ever try LSD?
Baby, I haven't tried a goddamn thing. The irony of me being a regular on this show, spectacular.
Yeah, but you're more of a puss than me. You've done less than me. I only do one drug a year. That's
it. Because you have a goddamn Patreon or whatever. Once a year, you throw this big crazy party. You're going to run out of them in a few years. Yeah, what are you running doing out 70? Of them.
You know, we did Whippets with TJ a couple weeks ago. That was fun. I enjoyed that.
I love that Whippets was your one. I really want, and we get nothing but great answers on this. I really want... When you go to the first for a drug, someone just goes trucker speed. I just want that as an answer bad. Just old fashioned trucker speed.
And now we move to the first time you had sex, and hopefully it didn't involve gang vocals. Bryn?
Oh. Sky.
This also started young because of the small town bored kid thing. Just two of us trying to fit in. Yeah, one thing I want to bring up quickly is, you know how people always think it's the idyllic thing to raise their kids in a small town?
No.
Raise your kids in a small town. They have nothing better to do than, like, drink and have sex.
Oh, I agree. I 100% agree.
13. So, 100. Well, I
think that's why I never was that into drugs. In New York City, there was so much to do that you were preoccupied. And that's why also I think there's kids young, they get married young, because they're fucking bored out of their minds. I really believe that as well.
Exactly. When I went to college and finally made friends from New York City and stuff, they were horrified at stories I told them. Yeah, like, you did what when you were 13?
Yeah, funny. 100%. How old were you when you had sex, you said?
12.
Jesus, that is young.
My
that is
goodness fucking... gracious. They grow up quick these days.
Yeah, well, in small towns they do. Alex, yours?
Oh, shit.
Is this turning into an episode of Dateline or something? Jesus.
It's becoming a sequel to Kids.
Dark.
Well, let's see. I think my experience was kind of typical. I think I was 16.
Okay.
All right.
I'm fortunate enough to say that I think I'm old enough that I don't know if I fully remember everything now, but I'm pretty sure I was 16, was dating a cheerleader.
Excuse me.
Got my license. No, was listening to a lot of Bad Motorfinger.
Great record.
Trying to have sex.
All right, fair enough. It's a pretty typical high school answer. Yes, James?
Wait, did you lose your goddamn virginity to a cheerleader listening to Jesus Christ Post? That might be the greatest thing ever. Or Holy Water. Who loses their virginity to Bad Motorfinger? Touchdown, goddamn it.
I like that.
That's why I'm always team two.
Sometimes you got to take the silver medal. In a situation like this, you get the goddamn silver, my boy.
This is why. Whenever the sun is shining and I get in my car, the first thing that goes on the radio is Bad Motorfinger. That is the best record to drive to.
One of my three favorites ever, to be quite honest. Yeah, so I love it to death.
All right, so you can follow these boys everywhere at Bang Camaro. The new single is released December 1st, Too Fast to Fall in Love. The album, TBD at this point, but should I assume that if all things go well, there might be a gang vocals tour coming up pretty soon, or no?
We have to figure that out. Everything's kind of up in the air. Like, a lot of our old singers have moved. This band had so many more logistics than... Right. Any other band I'd ever.
I mean, it's 15 years ago. Half of them might be dead for all we know at this point, yeah, right? Come on now.
No.
You never know.
Doing the speed.
I'm a father at Bang Camaro. Watch fucking Peacemaker and watch how well the songs fucking play along with that goddamn show. It's so good. Is there any, and also, you guys plug your Facebook, which shows your age, I guess. I should have figured out you were older when on your fucking Instagram, it goes to facebook.com/Bang Camaro. That should have been the fucking give right there. Anything else you guys want to plug before we go around the room?
Only that this is just the first single. We're going to be rolling them out over the next couple of months. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, man, I'm really excited to get this new Bang Camaro music out. It is, in my estimation, the best things that we've ever done. Like, I feel like the music is as good as it's ever been, if not better. So I'm very excited about it.
Nice.
I like that. I'm trying to think of hybrids. I came up with Kickstart My Feel Good was one of my names for a potential song.
Oh, Kickstart My Feel Good.
That sounds like something, right? James, your plugs?
The James Mattern pattern with an M, baby. The James Mattern. Instagram, Facebook. Check out the Check Spot special. You could buy the vinyl on pinchrecords.com. And yo, man, I'll be with Chrissy D. New Year's, Chris DiStefano at the Paramount Theater in Long Island. Two shows. I'm going to get ignorant after. So, you know, just holler at your boy. This is what we're going to be doing. And once again, shout out to Big Steve. Gone but not forgotten. Big Steve.
Let me ask you this, James. If you give somebody a nickname like Chrissy D,
yeah,
and then you have to say what Chrissy D stands for. Why bother using the shortened version?
Look, I get what you're saying. We all in the circle just call him Chrissy D. And then sometimes people, when I say Chrissy, be like, Chrissy Marr. I'm like, I ain't working. I ain't opening for her. Chrissy D. And then some people don't know. Or you say Chrissy and they like think Chris Rock. So okay. I'm going to not call my boy what he is. But then I'll do the double, baby. It's, you're getting two fits. Two fits, baby. Price of uno. You know what I'm saying?
I'll allow it. All right, Shannon, you there? Plug, Shannon.
Thank you, Caesar.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on and tell their own personal experiences about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
All right, and now we always ask our guests this. Does our guest believe in ghosts? Don't indicate if you believe in ghosts, but we are chiming in, and then we're all going to take a guess and see who's right. Alex and Bryn, here's where I'm going. Alex, yes. Bryn, no. James?
Flip. I got Alex, no. Bryn, yes.
Same. Alex, no. Bryn, yes.
And boys?
I just found out that our vet tech was on Ghost Hunters.
All right. So Alex, no. And Bryn...
No.
All right. So, I mean, I'm going to go.
It's a push. We each got one. We went one for two. No, wait. You went. No, we went one for two. You got one. We all went one for two. It's a push. We all leave with our money.
All right. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton, my other podcast on health and wellness, the Good Sugar Podcast. By the way, both my podcasts right now in the top 100 on iTunes.
That means anything.
It means nothing, but it just sounds good. I like to brag. We're opening our store. Shannon, you'll be happy to know I'm going next week to see like finishing touches of the store opening on 3rd and 69th Street. By the end of the year, it should be open. But guys, Bang Camaro, thank you so much for coming on the show. We add a song every week to the playlist. How do we not add Too Fast to Fall in Love? Go to the sdrshow.com/playlist. And guys, thank you so much for coming, and we'll see everyone next time on the SDR Show.